At the end of World War II, African Americans constituted a very small percentage of the United States Army, yet they accounted for nearly 80% of the death sentences handed down by military courts for crimes. 70 soldiers were executed in Europe for capital crimes between 1943 and 1946, and of that number, 55 were African American. Author Alice Kaplan has researched two cases that resulted in death sentences for American soldiers after the Second World War. One soldier was black, the other white. Through the eyes of a French translator who acted as an interpreter at some of the courts martials, Kaplan recreates what happened in the courtrooms. The book is entitled The Interpreter, and Alice Kaplan joins me now in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with us on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here.
First of all, who is the interpreter?
The interpreter is a man named Louis Guillou, a novelist. The Americans had no idea when they found him in his native town of Saint-Brieuc that they were hiring one of the most esteemed political novelists of his generation. They needed people who could speak enough English to help them, and there he was. So he entered the world of the Judge Advocate Department of the Army. And
this was right after D-Day, as
yes.
the war was still being fought
all
around.
I think we tend to forget that the liberation is wartime. You know, the Americans land in Normandy, but the war still goes on until May 1945. So
right.
it was a very traumatic moment for French people. Normandy and Brittany had terrible bombing. Guillou was exhausted from his own work in the resistance, and he was so delighted to see the Americans. He loved the men he worked with, but he saw something that shocked him, which was the fact that the U.S. Army was racially segregated as a matter of policy. And he could not believe that the army that was liberating Europe from the Nazis had apartheid.
Now, we should also say the cases that came up were actually cases committed by GIs against the French civilians.
That's correct. There are many cases in my book, but the two that struck Guillou particularly were the case of an African-American truck driver who fired a shot through a door, not knowing who was behind the door, and killed a French peasant. He was condemned to death and hanged in the village, hanged publicly in the village where the crime took place. This, remember, was 10 years after the U.S. had abolished public hanging. The second case that Guillou concentrates on in a novel he later wrote about his experience was the case of a white ranger officer who killed a French resistance fighter in a bar, killed him, you know, right to his face, and with an ingenious defense arguing that this resistance fighter was a spy, Winnington was acquitted.
Yeah. And in How did Guillou get interested in these? How did he get? What was his involvement? How did he get?
He
so
was the official interpreter in these courts martial. His job was to translate the testimony of civilian witnesses, and the cases haunted him for 20 years. He had a lot of trouble writing the novel about it because he was in such conflict. He loved the officers, and he found the system brutal.
Let's talk about the similarities, because you draw both similarities and discrepancies in between the two cases,
mm-hmm.
differences. What are some of the similarities between the case of James Hendricks, the African-American truck driver, and George Whittington? First of all, what happened in the case? Lead us up to that moment when James Hendricks shot at this door and killed the French farmer.
Okay. Well, James Hendricks had been in a very brutal training camp in Mississippi, was shipped over to Europe. He was drinking cognac with the guys. He went out. He knocked on some farmhouse doors, knocked on one door. They wouldn't let him in. He fired his rifle through the door. We don't know why. We can't know his intentions. And the man was standing behind the door, and the bullet hit him and killed him.
But part of the case was that there was an intention on his part to rape the women who were there as well.
After the door came open, he panicked. He chased the widow of this deceased man across the street. He assaulted her. He did not finish the rape. He tried to assault her. So that added up to felony murder, which was a capital offense. If he hadn't assaulted Naomi Bignon, I think there would have been an argument for manslaughter.
And in the case of George Whittington?
The case of George Whittington is so different than the case of Hendricks. For starters, George Whittington was a hero. He had the Army's second highest decoration for his bravery at D-Day. In fact, he's even a character in the movie The Longest Day.
Really?
Yes. And he had his brother come to help him. His brother was an officer with Montgomery. He had an ingenious defense lawyer, the same guy who prosecuted Hendricks. So I think what struck Guillou was not that the cases were the same, but that the black GI had everything going against him, and the white officers seemed to enjoy every privilege and had every benefit of the doubt for a murder of a for a cold-blooded murder of a resistance fighter.
And part of what the black GI had going against him, which you just alluded to, is the fact that he didn't have a very good defense. I mean, he had a very inexperienced defense lawyer.
It was common practice, and this is one of the things that was reformed after World War II, it was common practice to assign junior combat officers as defense on court-martial panels. And he was luckier than some. His defense counsel had been to law school. He wasn't a member of the bar. He had no criminal experience.
So later on, the interpreter wrote a novel about this.
With a funny title. He gave his novel a title in English, which is very rare in France. He called it OK Joe. Louis Guillou is a writer who is really brilliant at representing voices, and he loved the way the GIs talked. I got a chance to look at his diary notes and his notes for the novel, and he remembered all the things the GIs said. See you later, alligator, in a wild crocodile, you're a good egg. It was a lot of fun for me to translate that novel, which I did before I started working on this book. I wanted to see if the cases were based on historical fact, and I learned that they were.
Now, this is not a part of the history of the liberation of France that's very well known. How did you stumble upon this in the first place?
Well, I was finishing a book called The Collaborator about a French fascist who was tried and executed by de Gaulle's liberation government. And a French writer gave me a copy of OK Joe. He said, look at this novel. The French weren't the only ones executing people at the end of World War II. And I read the novel and I found it fascinating. I knew nothing about it. I mean, like many Americans, I grew up thinking of World War II really as the war where good is good, evil is evil, and we were strictly on the side of good. I was not aware of the extent of official segregation.
Now, you focus in this book on these two cases, but give us a sense of how widespread this was and how much of a problem this was at that time.
I would say the number of rapes and murders by the American army is certainly much, much smaller than what you'd see in the Russian army or the German army. But the Americans kept very, very careful records. One of the biggest shocks I had in doing my research was when I walked into a hidden cemetery outside a World War I cemetery to the east of Paris. The American army buried what it calls the dishonorable dead. There are 96 unmarked graves.
They're numbered.
And James Hendricks had the number 13.
Yeah.
Also in that grave was the father of Emmett Till, you know, Emmett Till, who would be brutally murdered 10 years later in Mississippi. And there the statistics are even more shocking because it includes men from the Mediterranean and North African theater. There are 96 men in Plot E, 80 African Americans.
And what was the percentage of African Americans in the entire...
8.5. It's just, you know, the problem is, it's something Simon Blackburn was just talking about, the problem of proof and truth, how you pin down where the systematic discrimination exists. And I think of my book in a way as a moral whodunit. Where does the discrimination start? Does it start in the training camps? Does it start in the courtroom? Does it start with a bad defense? Does it start with the assumption of criminality? I found a case of some white soldiers committed a crime almost identical to James Hendricks's. They were just sent back into combat.
Yeah. And there was a letter that had been sent out by one of the commanding officers. Tell us a little bit about that and how that relates to this as well.
Patton sent a memo to all the men under his command. I think it was 2 days before James Hendricks committed his crime. And he said it was directed to service troops, service units, and that's a code for African-American units because most African-American soldiers were confined to these service units where they did menial labor. He said, I'm going to get death penalties for any of you who commit crimes. This is what's now called undue command influence. It's now against the law. An officer would be removed from the military forces for saying such a thing.
Has the military ever looked into the kinds of questions that are raised in your book?
Absolutely. There was a commission, the Vanderbilt Commission, after World War II. A lot of pressure from the NAACP dealing with case after case of trouble. And the Army instated a uniform code of military justice and a court of military appeals after the war.
So it did lead to some reforms.
It led to reforms, yes.
You know, one of the saddest parts of this story is that James Hendricks' family never knew what happened to him. And you went and met with them.
That's right. I wrote, it was a long story how I found James Hendricks' family, but once I did, they received me very warmly. It was, I think, the most moving part of working on this book. They wanted to know what happened to him. They didn't know where he was buried.
Nobody had ever told them.
No one had ever told them. They had received, and I eventually got the documents from the Army with the telegram and the letter they were sent. It said he died of his own willful misconduct.
All right. Alice, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Alice Kaplan is author of the new book, The Interpreter, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.